Hello and welcome to the lineup from True Blue LA Enterprises. Can I say that? It's probably not allowed. There's probably some rule.
Yeah, we're, you know what? It's
limited.
It's the lineup with True Blue LA presented by Eric and Jacob LLC. No, it's probably not. You're right, Jacob and Eric.
So we last recorded before the winter meetings, and I went in thinking there were two possible outcomes, kind of a wild, active winter meetings where the Dodgers would be one, maybe not the top. Maybe not the top, but one of the big players, because this is a really kind of an odd offseason for them. Or it'd be kind of the winter seasons of old, not old, but the last decade or so.
Yeah.
Very slow. Not a ton happens. Maybe one big deal, but that's kind of it.
2017, 2018, those two off seasons.
Yeah.
Pretty slow.
Neither of those happened. And we're going to break down all of the news, almost none of which involves the Dodgers.
We do have, after the break, I will say we do have fire and thunder coming to you. So
you just had to say that before.
I did. All right. I put it in the notes even.
I see that. So we're going to break down the sort of non-off season of the Dodgers, kind of look what's happened around the league and where that leaves the Dodgers and what, if anything, they're going to be adding, or are they just going to make do with what we got? We'll hear Eric's opinions on that after this.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
There's a lot of teams where the equivalent podcast would be a really exciting episode.
Like, I'm sure at like a Mason Avenue, they're just like, woo, another signing. Oh my God.
So we can start with the Mets if you wanted, sure. Kind of break down their offseason. We're Mets podcast now. Yes. Steve, Uncle Steve broke out the checkbook, hired both of us.
That's right. Yeah, and you know what? We're way cheaper.
It really does resemble the 2000, whatever that, when the new ownership, 14? That's not right? The new ownership?
The big years were like 14, 15, 16.
Yeah, where they were just like, we got to use a lot of money quick to just reset a standard while we kind of develop the underbase. Now, maybe they really will copy the blueprint and they'll calm down, or maybe not. Maybe they'll just always be doing this. We'll find out. So what has happened to teams that aren't named the Los Angeles Dodgers?
Yeah. So we talked a lot last episode, a lot about like the position players and, you know, what they need to do, what they need to add, who's going to play shortstop. Is Gavin Lux going to play shortstop? But what the Giants and Padres have taught us is that in the NL West in 2023, you have to have at least two shortstops, like two starting. If you have a shortstop, you still need a shortstop. And that's
maybe they're reading the new shift rules very creatively.
That's right. Oh, so wait, if you name a player a shortstop, he could play anywhere. Yeah. Is that what we're getting at?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wait. So if the Padres, before we get into what they did, they could field a lineup with at least four shortstops at some point. So does that mean all four of them can be where the shortstop normally stands?
Yeah, that's the plan.
You know what? They've solved it. Who knows? But so first, this was like, I guess it wasn't technically the winter meetings when the Padres did their move. So Aaron Judge like signed on the last day of the winter meetings, right? Or like I guess they still haven't technically officially announced this, but came to an agreement. And I believe this happened twice in a way. Like the night before, it was like, well, okay. Oh, we haven't talked about Aaron Judge. John Heyman got ahead of his skis and reported, quote, Aaron Judge to Giants. And then, so that's hilarious in itself, right? Like just a typo, ha ha ha. Then he corrected it, Aaron Judge to Giants. Then within a few minutes, wait, you know what? Turns out I jumped the gun on this one or whatever, like got bad info. My apologies. So, and then by like what you could say, he stoked the flames to get the Yankees like more involved, I guess. And he ended up signing with the Yankees like the next morning for 9 years, 360. This is a theme we'll get to in a little bit, but that was like sort of the closing of the winter meetings roughly. And then, the Padres at once, it was said they had like a last minute offer and were, I guess reportedly offered more. I believe their offer was like $400 million. And there might've been shenanigans involved. They were also said to have offered Trey Turner more money than he signed with the Phillies. So the Padres are sitting here holding out their money going, hey, take this money. And so, but after like, you know, Turner and Judge, I guess they could do the same for Correa or whatever. But then like I guess it was Friday night. I don't remember the exact date of this, but then all of a sudden they're like, we got Xander Bogaerts. Okay. Like, they signed him for, what was he? 11,280.
Yeah, and I remember when we first kind of did an off-season look ahead, I went, I did pick Kinsey Swanson to be signed by the Dodgers. I'm sort of doubting that at this point, considering they haven't been really talked about with any of the other shortstops. They do really seem to be committed to Lux, from what we can publicly see. But I remember reading up also, hey, Xander Bogaerts would be a good idea because it'll be a shorter-term deal.
That's right. He'll be a lot cheaper. And, but here's the deal, though. Like, that's about right where I would have pegged his like average annual value over like a quote unquote normal contract. But like this offseason has been weird, but we'll get into like the whole thing. But so that was one, the Giants, sort of the Padres. So they, you might know, they have Ha-Seong Kim who played shortstop. He's their like best defensive shortstop. And Fernando Tatis, who's coming back from a suspension in April. He was a shortstop, also played some center field, but also not as good defensively as Kim. And there was already talk about him moving to the outfield anyway. But you have Manny Machado, who's like, who came up as a shortstop. He's obviously a excellent third baseman, as is. Jake Cronenworth has played shortstop. He mostly plays second. Now he's basically at first. They have Ha-Seong Kim moving to second. And then Xander Bogaerts at short with Machado at third. And Fernando Tatis at, I think, in right, because they're going to have, oh, by the way, they also have Juan Soto in left. Like that's pretty ridiculous. So they were good before, but like, it's just, okay. That you've made your point, San Diego. You're very good. We get it. But, so that's one thing. And then, then the other sort of tease came, I guess this was what, Monday night, where Ken Rosenthal had a call. He's been doing a lot of like, I like the style of these, especially like since right before the winter meetings, he'll just tweet out what I'm hearing. And that's kind of, it's not fully the exact title of the story, but almost every story seems to be like, what I'm hearing regarding X, you know, and then they'll just, he has great detail. He's a great reporter, obviously. But then I think he and Andy McCullough and I, at least one other writer there, oh, maybe it was Dan Hayes, the Twins writer, reported that the Giant, or not the Giants, the Mets were also in on Carlos Correa. It was, meanwhile, we didn't go specifically on the Mets, but they are, so they signed Justin Verlander. They brought back Brandon Nimmo for 8 years, $162 million. They signed Jose Quintana. They signed Kodai Senga, the Japanese pitcher, for 5 years, $75 million. They've signed, I think, eight guys so far this offseason. Their payroll for next year for, like, CBT purposes, I think, is estimated at around $345 million, which is by far going to be a record. Their tax for going over the limit is already at, like, going to be roughly $75 million. So they're in the, like, 430 range. I was looking back at this for a thing I wrote last week. Or earlier this week, the Dodgers were, you mentioned this, where the Mets are in this, the early phase of the Steve Cohen ownership, right? Where they're sort of building up the infrastructure, the development pipeline, which they have been investing in. You just don't hear about that stuff more because it's not public, really. But, like, they're sort of building up to where they can have a more pipeline system where you develop guys, you draft well. You bring in people and get the best out of them, that sort of thing. But to do that while also contending on the major league level, you just basically have incredible expenditures. Like, so the Dodgers in, like, from like 2015 to, or 2014 to, like, 2016-ish, 2015 was, like, the biggest year. I think in total payroll plus tax, the Dodgers were at, like, $340 million or so in 2015. But then you factor in the back when the international bonus system was sort of more open, they had penalties for going over, but teams could just, you could go over. It was like 100% tax over a certain amount. So, like, the Dodgers in 2015 to 2016, that was back when it was mid-year, the Dodgers paid like $92 million. It was like 46 something in bonuses, $46 million in bonuses. That was the Yadier Alvarez. Yusniel Diaz. Those are like the big ticket guys. Yordan Alvarez was in that group who they traded away, and I don't remember what happened to him after that. Anyway, with all that, they were probably at, like, Mets level now in that year. But, like, now the international market with the last two CBAs and the draft has been essentially, like, capped, you know, not exactly capped, but mostly. So really the only way you can spend wildly is payroll, you know. So that's what the Mets are doing. And so it sort of made sense from a, you know what, F it, we're just going to do this. That were the Mets. So it made sense they were interested in Correa. But then I guess Tuesday – or, you know, I guess the report was earlier Tuesday, and then the news of Correa to the Giants came Tuesday night later. Mm-hmm. Like, it was within, like, an hour of the Rosenthal. It was, like, it was one of those, you know, I'm not questioning the reporting at all. Obviously, it was probably very sound reporting, but just the timing of this is funny that, you know, where the Giants, you know, we can't let this one slip. We wanted to get Judge. Here is another situation where, and to be fair, Correa, premium free agent, like, in his own right, you could argue he's a better bet long term than Judge. I mean, maybe, but very good move. But another deal, 13 years, $350 million. So that's where we're at, like, in terms of, like, the backdrop of this offseason. So, you know, you mentioned that Dodgers seem pretty comfortable with Gavin Lux. That's what they've gone out of their way to say it. Like, they're not going to outright say, yeah, he's our shortstop. You know, that's we're not dangling D Gordon. He's our second baseman. That's not that, right? But, like, also, what else are they going to say too? They're like, you know what? He's kind of limited. We're just going to keep him at second. We do, you know, if they are, like, actually talking to other shortstops, they're not going to be like, well, there has to be at least the the plausibility of them like walking away. And I don't think they've backed themselves into a corner by any means or anything. But so we talked about the last episode a lot about the position players, how they desperately need depth. I think the main thing they were going for is probably like an outfielder who could play center. And Kevin Kiermaier is someone who they sort of targeted. And he went and chose Toronto. I believe his deal, I haven't seen the exact number. Maybe it might have been $9 million. I know it's a report is between $8 and $10 million. I don't think that's been finalized just yet. But that's sort of where they're at, I would imagine. That's probably around what the Dodgers would have been willing to pay for someone like Kiermaier. Not that they're limited just to that for other people, but like that's sort of where we're at. But I think this episode, since we did position players a lot last time, let's focus on the pitching this time around.
Alrighty. No, so, what if I just said nah? I want to talk more about hitters.
just peeling back the curtain a little bit, most of these, the plan for this podcast was sort of set in stone. We're recording on Wednesday. This was set in stone on Tuesday. Literally on Wednesday, the Dodgers knew what we were going to talk about. Obviously, they hacked my system and saw the notes. So they went and added two pitchers. One officially, they traded for a reliever who had a zero ERA in 2022.
Closer so material.
Basically solidifying an already strong bullpen. Oh, by the way, this reliever, JP Fireisen, for the Rays, just had shoulder surgery last week, and he's probably not going to pitch till August. But still, you know,
pretend it's a trade deadline acquisition.
All like kidding is that he's actually probably going to end up being a really solid pickup. Like, again, it's a reliever. It's not a sure thing, obviously. He's also coming off surgery. He's 30. He's going to be 30. He was really good last year. Zero ERA aside, his peripherals were fine. He has like 2 years, 108 days of service time. He has two options left. So this is someone who could help in the next 3 to 4 years or whatever. But again, being a reliever, those things aren't like they're volatile. So I'm not saying, hey, they just got a guy for 4 years or whatever. It's not that. It's more like he could help them down the road. But he does take up a 40-man spot now, which will sort of get into how they sort of plan in the offseason. You can't put a guy on the 60-day injured list till spring training starts in February. So for 2 months, he's sort of in limbo. Same thing with Walker Buehler. Same thing with Blake Treinen. They're taking up spots on the 40-man. At which has a cost to it because it limits sort of what you do. You have to like make a corresponding move if you're adding more and more guys. So, but to get an idea of what it might cost to get a starting pitcher, right? Before we get into the other pitcher the Dodgers acquired, let's check the overall free agent market. As a rough guide, I use the MLB Trade Rumors top 50 free agents. So now obviously it's not the be all end all, but they have like contract guesses. They're Fangraphs did contract guesses. Jim Bowden at The Athletic did contract guesses. There's more. Kylie McDaniel at ESPN. There's plenty of them. I just chose this because it was an easy list to sort of peruse. So to date, 33 of the top 50 have signed. 4 contracts were nailed exactly, mostly because they were kind of obvious. Kershaw getting 1 year and $20 million.
Hey, that became official, by the way. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, that did. That's right. As did – was Shelby Miller also?
No, we both were still unannounced when we last recorded.
Oh, it was unannounced. Okay, that's right. But it was.
We talked about it. Yeah, just unannounced.
Okay. Kodai Senga, they correctly predicted 5 years, 75. And then the two players who accepted the qualifying offer, Jock Peterson and Martin Perez. So those are the 4 that they got. So there's 29 other players who have signed. 24 of them got more total money. 18 of them got a higher average annual value than the predicted contract. But the years were like split kind of evenly. 10 got more years than expected. 12 got the exact same years as expected, and 7 got fewer years. I would say very generally the trend is leaning toward more total money. And if you look at like the top free agents, like some of the ones we mentioned, they got a lot more than like the total contract, but at maybe a lesser average annual value. So that gives us sort of a a baseline to view how the Dodgers have not made official this signing. By the time you listen to this, it might be official, but Noah Syndergaard is has agreed to a contract with the Dodgers for 1 year and $13 million. That makes him on the less costly side. So of the group that have signed, only five of them got less total guarantee than the MLB trade rumors guess. So they had him at 3 years and $36 million. So he got a little bit more of an average annual value. It's just 1 year.
I just realized reuniting him with Dustin May. So
that's right. I believe so. I think at least I've seen at least three people, and I'm assuming it was independent. I believe Bill Plunkett was one of them. Underdog Craig on the site mentioned this, but I believe he said that now they have Syndergaard and Gingergaard, which I thought was pretty funny. So they had Syndergaard ranked as the 21st ranked free agent on MLB trade rumors. So he made $21 million last year. He was also kind of so-so, right? He's going to be 30 this year. He had a 3.94 ERA. His peripherals were a little worse. He had the worst strikeout rate of his career. He pitched 134 innings. He also had Tommy John surgery in 2020. He only made he pitched in two innings combined in 2020 and 21. So last year was his first year back. His four-seam fastball averaged 93.6 miles an hour. That's four ticks down from pre-surgery. So you could say, like, maybe he's further removed from surgery. There's some upside there. That's probably the play, like, here. That's probably why he did a one-year deal. He's trying to rebuild value, that sort of thing. But that's sort of where we're at. So, first of all, before we get into, like, the rest of the rotation, do you have any initial thoughts on Syndergaard?
You know, saw some sort of general talk on Twitter and Reddit noting that a lot of the Dodgers' better reclamation projects have not been pitchers historically associated as sort of throwers, as Syndergaard is.
Yeah.
But, you know, one, it's possible that, you know, I can't substantiate this. I had seen that maybe he's working out at Driveline. So perhaps he can pull kind of a Verlander and find that velocity again, or perhaps they can make him more effective, you know, with sort of that, the slider they've been teaching everybody, it seems, and kind of tweak the arsenal a little bit or improve his existing arsenal to, even if you know, he only can get back up to say 95 or even lower, still able to pitch effectively and sort of reinvent himself.
I forgot to include it in the notes here, but I will say there's a couple encouraging things, at least for me. His sort of as sort of, you know, like meh that he was last year, that's probably harsh, but like he did limit like exit velocity and hard hit balls relatively well. He wasn't like near the top of the league or anything, but he was above average in like limiting hard contact, that sort of stuff. That sort of, in a weird, like, obviously they're different pitchers, but that's sort of where Tyler Anderson was at before last year, and he like took it to another level. The other thing I forgot to mention was Eno Saris at The Athletic, just absolute guru and expert when it comes to like actual pitching styles and stuff and things like that. So he has a metric called Location Plus that sort of measures like a pitcher's command. And Syndergaard, you know, like, for being a hard thrower as he is, he actually does have five pitches. Now, two of them, he has two-seamer and four-seamer, and then curveball, changeup, slider.
Yeah. No, and that was definitely sort of unfair on my bet. I guess that a big quality was how fast
you're right. He throws the fastball super hard. So yeah. He does stand out for that. Like, but what Eno noted, what he was one of the, like, I think, I don't remember, maybe there were 10 total pitchers that was like above average on location on like at least five pitches. And so if you can throw that many pitches like for strikes, you're probably going to be in a good spot. So yeah, just maybe improving on the edges probably gets him a little bit better, but so that there's certainly signs for like a rebound there, but let's look at what he sort of steps into. So the Dodgers right now, their rotation is five pitchers deep to start the season. Julio Urias, obviously coming off Cy Young votes for 2 years running. So in 2021, counting the regular season and postseason, he was just over 200 innings, 202/3 exactly. And then 180 innings last year. That by far leads the group. Clayton Kershaw, who came back, 121 innings in 2021, 131 innings in 2022. Tony Gonsolin, so he was limited by shoulder stuff in 2021, only pitched 72 innings. Last year, he went 133 2/3. That counts the playoffs. That was just shy of his professional high, which is 139 2/3 in 2018. Now, he was gangbusters until an elbow injury knocked him out all of September. And then we saw like he was limited toward the end of the year and the postseason. So that's an issue. It's something to watch, but like that's where he's at. And I think I don't know what you can count on in terms of like number of innings for him, but like just if they can get some level of like where he was last year, maybe improve a little bit, like just, I don't know, durability wise, or I don't know how you sort of prevent that. Then you have Dustin May, obviously like easily like the best stuff on the staff, even if like Walker Buehler was healthy, even no matter he has great stuff. But he's also coming off Tommy John surgery, 51 total innings last year, the majors and minors. This will be his like first normal offseason in a little bit. So that's good. That's a positive. And then you have Syndergaard, who just had his first like sort of complete season since Tommy John. So maybe he's further removed, that sort of thing. So on the 40-man roster, they also have Ryan Pepiot and Michael Grove, who started last year. And then you have, we've talked about like before, off the 40-man, Gavin Stone, Bobby Miller are probably going to make imprint at some point. They're going to make starts. But before we get into the rest, let's say of these five pitchers, Urias, Kershaw, Gonsolin, May, Syndergaard, how often will they pitch for the Dodgers in 2023? We're going to guess starts, total starts and total innings by those five.
Okay.
Do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
I'm going to let you know right now. I'm going to be really boring on this. I read the head. I have a strategy. I'm ready to go.
I thought you were going to be like 162.
No, I'm going to. Do you want to go? How do you want to do this? You want me to do all five? Do you want to do one pitcher at a time?
No, just a total number.
Oh,
you can talk about your process to get to it.
So I thought we were going to do each individually, and I was going to do 140 innings in 25 games for all five of them, knowing
you'd be at 125 and 700.
There you go.
Okay, so that's your guess.
Yes,
125 starts. 700 innings. Okay. So I will say again, having planned this, before they signed Syndergaard, we were going to guess the four and then figure out what was left after that. In my head, I had 100 starts and 550 innings for the four.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to add, I'm going to couch it though a little bit. And so I'm going to say 118 starts. And then I'm going to say, 638 innings.
Okay. That should set a nice kind of over under the for I win if this, you win if that.
That's right. But also, I sort of want to do that as an exercise because
exercise. I don't want to exercise.
God, this is the holidays. It's December. We don't exercise. But even at like our most optimistic of guesses, that means the Dodgers have to account for at least between 37 and 44 starts this year, this coming year. So that's also normal. Like the Dodgers used 12 starters last year. Now, if you remove the two openers, they really used 10 starters, right? But that's generally what happens. Like they haven't used fewer than 10 real starting pitchers in a season. Under the current front office, that's an 8-year stretch going back to 2015. So, in other words, we're going to see a lot of people pitch for them. Some of those we mentioned will be Pepiot and Grove, Bobby Miller and Gavin Stone, I'm sure, are going to be up at some point. But even with all nine of those pitchers contributing, it's very clear, like, the Dodgers, it wouldn't surprise me if they signed someone else. Like, last year they signed Tyler Anderson as, like, the sixth starter. He started the year in the bullpen. I don't know if they're going to, like, go out and sign another, like, major league deal to be that right now, given how close the other people are. But it wouldn't surprise me if they do, like, a non-roster invitee to sort of fill that, like, let's bring another guy in here and see what we got. You know, that sort of
thing. I do love how excellent, like, the Dodgers offseason moves are in, like, circa the mid-teens of the 20, like, Noah Syndergaard, Jason Hayward, Clayton Kershaw, Shelby Miller.
Haven't even brought up Jason Hayward. By the way, they also signed him to a non-roster MID, which is funny for a couple reasons. So he was released by the Cubs, final year of his deal, and I think he's making $22 million, which the Cubs are on the hook for. If he makes the Dodgers will be responsible for the major league minimum of $720,000. So it's very possible. I'd say that the Cubs are going to be on the hook for about $38.7 million for both Cody Bellinger and Jason Hayward. And then in 2023, and then it's just a matter of what do the Dodgers get out of Jason Hayward versus that. That's sort of a fun little backdrop. Cody Bellinger, we're recording Wednesday. His deal, I guess he hadn't signed with the Cubs since we last recorded. We didn't know that. So he signed with the Cubs, and that became official today. The Dodgers sent out a goodbye thing. It was a 2-minute long video. Probably could have been longer, but no, it was a good video. He sent out a thank you on Instagram, but yeah. So Cody Bellinger no longer. I had planned to sort of go through the rest of, like, the other starting pitchers, but that was before they signed Syndergaard. So I'm just going to mention them. So the other starting pitchers who are in the top 50 MLB trade rumors free agents who have not signed, Carlos Rodon, who the Dodgers were sort of loosely linked to, but it seems like the Yankees are sort of going for him as well. He's in that higher end where, like, I said something like he wanted 7 years, or I don't know. That seems a lot, but this market, you never know, right? Like, he opted out of $22 million this year, or 23, I guess, 22 and a half. Then old friend Nathan Eovaldi is in there. He's 23rd. He's missed some time with injuries the last few years. Michael Wacha was 41st. Corey Kluber was 48th. I remember, I think I texted you when Syndergaard signed earlier Wednesday that I was sort of unenthused by this, but I had mistakenly thought I placed him lower on the list than this. I would actually much rather have Noah Syndergaard than Michael Wacha or Corey Kluber at this point. I'm not sure what else they have left, but that's where we're at with those guys. But yeah, given all that, so all this talk of, like, free agent starting pitching, who the Dodgers have signed, all that sort of stuff. This week marks the 24th anniversary of the Dodgers signing Kevin Brown to a record $105 million over 7 years. It was December 12th, 1998. That was heading into his age 34 season. My question for you, Jacob, is this. How many starts did Kevin Brown make for the Dodgers?
I will... At least, you know, these number questions I like, because I can just throw out a number. And
that's right.
Frequently you then make fun, and when it's not a trivia, it's a prediction, you make fun of me and I end up being right. So, but yeah, I'll have a guess. You'll tell me how wrong I am after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
100. That's my guess.
We just came right back into this. Wow.
Media res. How many starts did Kevin Brown make for the LA Dodgers? I seem to recall. He signed before, you know, was going to games. I knew the name, but wasn't really a fan. And his trade to the New York Yankees for Jeff Weaver was 03 offseason? 03 to 04 offseason?
It was.
Because that 04 season is really the Gagne in the 03, and then I really locked in 04. And followed the playoff race and all of that. And I remember being confused.
And Jeff Weaver was really good, like for what he was. But like, he turned out to be really
good. Because I had a teacher who was a Yankees fan. And so all I had was like, Kevin Brown's really good and the Yankees hate Jeff Weaver. I don't understand this trade. I'm confused. And, you know, I had no idea how contracts worked and length and all of that.
Yeah.
Controllability, all of that. So that means I know he only pitched for 6 years. I seem to recall
five.
I know math. Yeah. Makes me want to lower my number, but I'm going to stick to my guns. I said 100, I'll stick to 100.
Yeah. So the reason I asked is because he's considered during this period to be oft injured, and that's relatively correct. However, he did come around, made 129 starts in his 5 years. Now he was, I would say, borderline excellent when he pitched. Yeah. 283 ERA.
When we do like pitching record questions from Craig coming up, his name comes up for sure.
Yeah. So 147 ERA plus in 5 years. Back when we would accept that as a savior type pitcher before a certain other. Right after the Dodgers ditched Kevin Brown, they drafted another who sort of redefined all that for us. But he was really good when he pitched. But I would say really only healthy for like 3.5 of the five seasons he was there. But, you know, still, I think people like to poo-poo that contract a lot, although it turned out to be okay. Like it was perfectly fine. But yeah.
I also did not look ahead to the questions. I just knew that they were coming up because it is time for
With Gene and Craig. We love them.
Five questions from Craig. There's my son. But we start with force. One question is broken down into four subparts of trivia for you, Eric. And this week, I being Craig, decided to go for statistical leaders in the Jacob era, which is our lovely way to say the wild card time frame. Although my era really is a little after the wild card came.
I was going to say, does he think, I mean, I know Craig is exactly right on the era, but I wonder if he's trying to make he's trying to call you a wild card.
I'll take it. What a lovely nickname.
That's right.
The first question. Can Eric name the six players to record 3,000 or more hits since 1995? Bonus points if you can name them from six to first.
All right, let's calm down with that one. okay, since 95, so you're going to have, wait, this, when he says six, is he talking about total hits?
Correct.
Okay. Then I will say, don't tell me if I'm wrong on the order, just that I'm just going to name them. Derek Jeter, Albert Pujols. I will say, I think, I don't remember when he actually made the list. I think Miguel Cabrera is sixth. And I am having a lot of trouble coming up with the rest. But, did he play long enough? Oh, man. Now, this is players who only had 3,000 hits during this time period, right?
Correct.
Okay, because like I think Craig Biggio like made the 3,000 hit club like since 95, but he obviously started his career before then. So, that is my way of stalling. Now, Ichiro. So this is where it gets tough because I'm having a real hard time. Now, the only other person I could think of here is, and I'm not even sure he reached this, was maybe Adrian Beltre.
I remember his celebration very distinctly. So he's actually third for what it's worth after Pujols. Third,
wow,
isn't that wild? Considering how like one year wonder when he left the Dodgers
and down period in Seattle. That was the sort of perception. But I guess when you start playing when you're, 14 or whatever he was, so then you add up some. No, he was really good. Now
so you're missing one name.
Yeah. Oh boy. So someone in. Oh God. 3,000 hits. Here's the deal. You really. Couldn't have started like Cabrera started in like 03 or 02. So you have to, and like Jeter was literally 95. I'm having a hard time figuring out like which like hit type players started in that time. So I think I have to bow out on the six. I just can't think of it.
A-Rod.
Come on,
who did start in 94, but only is he, for a is cup he of coffee, fourth? So. He is fourth, yes.
Yeah,
and then Ichiro, and then Miguel Cabrera. Mm-hmm. 12 players have accumulated 10,000 or more plate appearances in time period. Can you name these players? 12 names who did not need a map to home plate. Hint: Eric already named half of them in that last question.
Yeah, no. Okay.
Can you name the other six? We'll say.
Okay. So since 95.
What's funny is the top five in plate appearances are all on the previous list, which makes sense, but it's still funny
right.
to me.
Okay. So let's go. Todd Helton.
No.
Todd Helton. Okay, so I'm just going to keep saying it. No, I don't know why this is, like, tripping me up, but 10,000 plate appearances. When all you need is a knife. For some reason, I'm thinking of the song Ironic in my head right now. Oh, my God. 10,000 plate appearances. So I don't know why this is tripping me up. So I think my brain is shutting off like which players like started their career during then, but like, I'm having a hard time here with this. Now Chase Utley got hurt a lot. So shut up, phone.
I heard you mention Chase Utley.
Yeah.
I love Chase Utley.
Wow, this is sad.
Not a single name.
I don't understand why I'm blanking on this. I'm trying to think of like, so what about like Jim Tomei?
Nope.
Let's see.
I'm gonna give you some teams. How about that? Teams. Fine. So sure. One player I don't think had the rest I think have kind of an iconic team associated with them. The other moved around a lot, but Royals, Astros, Mets.
Oh, Carlos Beltran.
Yeah.
Hall of Fame ballot this year.
You have two players, one almost entirely, and one primarily known for their time with the Red Sox.
David Ortiz.
Yep.
Wait, is there another Red Sox?
Yep. Primarily. And so one almost entirely, which was Ortiz, and then primarily this player also played with the Yankees some.
What? with the Red Sox
And then went to the Yankees, perhaps shaved some glorious hair and facial hair in the process. Johnny Damon.
He got batted 10,000 times. What a world. What a world we live in.
Next, Braves.
Chipper.
Yep. Next, Phillies.
Okay. Oh, Jimmy Rollins.
Yep.
Yeah, he would have got
that. And the next.
You should have said Dodgers. I would have got it. No, just kidding.
How about this? Next, I'm going to do the same thing. Phillies, but played for other teams, including the Dodgers. Less iconic in Philly. Oh, definitely primarily a Philly in my mind.
Oh.
His last. Last stint. No, oh, you got it?
No. Hold on. Wait. How? What? Who? Okay, this is dumb. Wait, so he also played for the Dodgers, mostly known as a Philly.
Yeah.
It can't be Chase Elliott. It's not Ryan Howard. He never played for the Dodgers. But like it's not Carlos Ruiz, who only played for the Dodgers. Now it's not Jason Worth.
It is not Jason Worth.
Shane Victorino.
Bobby Abreu.
Ah, of course. Yeah, that's you're right.
All right, we mentioned
hand, I was just wrong.
Pitcher trivia question for you. So we've got some. Seven pitchers have. I'm glad he's leading with this. Have given up 3,000 hits since Major League Baseball had wild card teams. Name these pitchers.
Oh God. Okay. So.
The next question's also.
Oh, great. You know what? But here's the deal. So, are we starting at 94 or 95? Do you have his list?
95.
So that's only 13 years of Greg Maddux. So, or 14 years of Greg Maddux. Greg Maddux. Shut up, Eric. So the thing is, pitchers don't throw like 3,000 innings anymore. So like, what the hell are we doing? Tom Glavin started in 91.
I'll let you know, all of these pitchers had more than 3,000 innings pitched.
Well, yeah, I get that. I'm just saying, like, shut up. That's what I'm saying, you know. CC Sabathia.
He's on the list. He gave up 3,404.
Mark Burley.
Mark Burley's on the list. He gave up 3,472.
Levon Hernandez. He was a metronome for a while.
Gave up 3,525.
Just for the record, he's really good. He literally went like 30 starts for like something like crazy, like 13 straight years or something. All right. 3,000. Oh, I guess in this, I guess Curt Schilling,
not on this list.
Huh. Pedro didn't pitch 3,000. Even if he did, he probably would have had to pitch 4,000 to give up 3,000 hits.
You have one former Dodger and two pitchers largely known for pitching well into their elder years, and then a Yankee Astro. Nothing else to say. Hall of Famer.
I hate that. Roger Clemens?
No.
No, because he pitched way before it. A Yankee Astro Hall of Famer, a pitcher. Andy Pettit. So the other one is what Dodgers? That is a primary Dodger is one of them.
No.
Oh, okay. I wonder.
But had some really good. Had some good years with the Dodgers.
Who were the primary? The other two.
Andy Pettit's not in the Hall of Fame. Why did I think he was? Was I might have been conflating him with Moose in my head.
Oh, okay.
When I was talking real quick. I was trying to give you a hint, but you got it anyways. So
what about the other what are the other teams again?
Here you go. Two players known for pitching to their elder years. I think you can get it off that. And then the Dodger also pitched for let's say the Angels and Brewers and Royals and Astros and Diamondbacks. Not in that order. The order would be Royals, Brewers, Angels, Dodgers, Diamondbacks, Astros, Royals.
What?
Zach Greinke.
Okay, but what was the other team though? I didn't hear you on
the other player. Two players. I did not give you teams. I just mentioned
got it. Sorry.
That they one pitched until he was 49, and one pitched until he was 45.
Oh, so Jamie Moyer is 49, and Bartolo Colon.
I was about to say one has the most famous home run in Mets history. Yeah.
Nice.
Six pitchers. I love this question. Forgive me for loving it, but
you're
going to hate it. Six pitchers have allowed 250 or more stolen bases since 1995. Karen, Eric named these pitchers who let runners take that base so easily.
So I don't have this in front of me, but I know Noah Syndergaard used to be really bad at allowing stolen bases. Now, he's certainly not in the 250 group because he hasn't pitched enough, but that, for some reason, that made me think of him. So let's say, given 250 steals.
I will say first place in this list is by a good amount, and it does make sense if you think about it. That might not be a hint, but I did want to say it.
It does make sense. Like, what is. I was going to say, like, well, Jim Abbott was kind of done by 95. No. What do you mean makes sense? Like, wait, okay, all right. No, because he didn't do it. I'm the only, for some reason, I just have is the tornado wind up in my head, so I'm just going to say Hideo Nomo.
Hideo Nomo gave up 300 stolen bases.
Nice, okay.
Not the leader, though. The leader has 436.
I was going to be fair, though, he did go from the stretch and he didn't have the full wind up when runners are on base. But, wait, 436 or something?
Yep.
Okay. Pettit had a great pickoff, which is a balk because he's a left-hander and they all cheat. who are these? Is it Bartolo Colon?
It is not.
Is it Jamie Moyer?
It is not. I'll let you know, Derek Lowe is on this list at 249. Oh, I just missed it.
Man, I am having a hard... Ted Lilly?
Nope, I'm going to give you one more guess.
Yeah. Do you have any other hints by chance?
The player in first is a Red Sox.
Oh, Tim Wakefield.
Mm-hmm. See? Nice. Yeah.
Now, you know what? That does make sense. I forgot, before we get into the other question, Bruce Levine, Chicago reporter, his deal, because I just saw it retweeted again earlier today. Cubs make Bellinger deal official. 1 year with a mutant option. That was his entry into the title.
Did you ever play like the SNES or N64 era baseball games as a knuckleballer? It was fun.
Oh man, I didn't. My main two games were Baseball Stars, and then I forgot there was like a PC baseball game, which I forget which one I played.
You're too old to have appreciated backyard baseball, which is a shame. Of the Cespedes Barbecue guys, big favorite of mine.
Yeah, I'm aware of Pablo Sanchez. That's the name, right? On there. I lived with my brother and his family for part of like 2001 into 2002, and so a couple of their kids were playing that. So I would see it, and I was aware of it. I'm not that. I'm hip, as the kids say. I'm aware.
So I'm just going to give you the names unless you wanted to throw one more out.
Oh, I do not.
Greg Maddux.
Yeah.
AJ Burnett. Randy Johnson. And then John Lackey.
Nice.
All right. And moving on to non-trivia questions. You did, did not do so great.
Nope.
If there is one thing that a Friedman Constructor team has done since 2015 is hand the ball to pitchers who have little to no Major League Baseball experience. Perhaps the Dodgers are waiting for pitchers who will take a one-year deal.
Wait, he's saying they have not done, right? They have not done that.
Hey, you tell me. I'm reading it as it's written, my friend. Perhaps the Dodgers are waiting for pitchers who will take a one-year deal. Hey, were these sent before
They were 10 before Syndergaard.
You know, Craig knows what he's talking about.
Right.
As opposed to even these two-year deals that Shaman and Ross Stripling got this week.
Both of them signed with the Giants, by the way. 2 years, $25 million, both.
Do you expect more NRI pitchers with shots for the Dodger rotation, or is there a big signing or trade to expect for the rotation?
So I think Syndergaard ends up being the quote unquote big signing in that regard.
Ooh,
yeah, right. But I do think, like, I don't think they are going to necessarily. I guess unless someone like fell to them, but I think it's going to be some like a non-roster invitee type, maybe. But like I can't see them. I think they're just so with Syndergaard, which is not official at the time we're recording. They're going to have 39 players on the 40-man, with needing to, like we mentioned last episode, add probably at least 2 to 3 position players still. And you can't put the Fireisen, Bueller, Trinan on the 60-day IL until mid-February when spring training starts. So for like 2 months, they're in this like limbo where any move they make has to have a corresponding move, or almost, because they're at 39. So, like, I do sort of wonder, ignoring the pitcher part of this. Now, I don't know if it's, like, if they're taking Justin Turner for granted that he wants to come back to L.A. They've obviously talked to him, about this. The Marlins, I think, were reported to be interested in him. But I wonder if it's more like, because Justin Turner's talking about the Dodgers are going to wait, see what there are luxury tax wise and all this sort of stuff and come back to him. But so do they expect him to wait on them? That sort of thing. I kind of wonder if it's a thing where he almost signs like right at the beginning of spring training, like as they put Walker Buehler on the 60-day IL or something to create, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, not that it's like a agreed upon thing, but either that, or like, does he just say, like, also they have to sort of have a role for him, and who knows how that's going to play out, because that would depend on who else they get. But like, I do wonder if that's sort of like, if it's that sort of thing. So maybe they could add another pitcher on a major league deal around that time, but I think it's probably going to be like a non-roster guy more likely than anything.
Dodge will have a new regular center fielder and shortstop next season. I wonder if they'll have a regular center fielder, if that's going to be kind of a rotating spot. So anyways, finding players that are really good offensively and defensively will be a challenge, and also probably quite costly. How important is the defensive part for the Dodgers? And if you had to pick a player who is good to great in defense, along with being just okay in offense, what position would you pick that one to be on the Dodgers in 2023?
Shortstop, probably, I think.
I'll go with center. I'll take the opposite. Yeah, and some of this is just like, because I can't look past that. Like, I just think Gavin Lux is a shortstop, and I expect him to be pretty good offensively. And
maybe
he'll blow me away, but I'm expecting about average.
I will say it would be disappointing if we talked about this, I think, before we recorded, where I think they're going to end up signing at least one like starter level bat. Now, where that person plays, I don't know. But it would behoove them, I think, to sign. Now, it might be in the sort of water they're swimming in, or they're choosing to swim in if they want to stay under the luxury tax. Now, if those players might be flawed, like it could be like a JD Martinez, who's really good hitting, but terrible in left if they have to play him there, and also played not exclusively DH, but I think he started 139 games at DH in 2022. Now, I'm just using him as an example. I think they would go more for like probably like an Andrew McCutchen, let's just say, because I think they've been rumored to him. If they sign him like on a 1 year deal or like a 2 year deal or something like that, and have him sort of as the left fielder in this case, and then you're moving around guys based on everything else. Like, I don't know. I can't think of a free agent out there who's like really good defensively that would sort of solve this problem. I guess if they would have gotten Kiermaier, center field defense. Like, not that he would have played every day. He's also coming off of surgery himself. But like center field defense would have been at least shored up to a point to where, and obviously Trace Thompson can play there. Chris Taylor can play there. Chris Taylor can also play the middle infield. And I think with Taylor, it's more, he's always like the guy who, okay, where do we need the extra guy or whatever sort of thing. I don't think you set him to a position, but I think if they shore up one of the other positions, maybe it makes it more palatable to be like a little bit flawed in the other spots, you know, defensively, if you like have a strong enough offense or whatever. So I don't know. I guess shortstop to me makes sense just because if you have Lux at second, I think it makes them overall better. Like the sort of up and comer there is Michael Bush, but like maybe later in the year, you know, that sort of a thing with him. So I it's not like he's going to be on the opening day roster or anything. So that's where my head's at on the shortstop part. Like, I also don't know. I know the Dodgers were, you know, everyone's talking about like the Brewers, maybe they're not going to trade Willy Adames or something, which I get it. It makes sense, but that would be someone who maybe the Dodgers can be interested in. And then you could also keep Lux at second. I do wonder, I was looking into like maybe Luis Urias from the Brewers, who has like, I think 2-3 years left under team control or under arbitration, excuse me. But he is not like a world beater by any means, but he would be more in the range of like guy they bring in as the sort of like super utility infielder. He could play second, short, and third, and average-ish bat. Like, that would work, even if he doesn't, like, start every day. So something like that, I think, would make sense. And that you can even, like, still have Lux at shortstop in that case and then just move Urias around. If Michael Bush is ready at some point, you can call him up to bat occasionally at second and then, you know, move Luis Urias around as needed. I don't know. I'm thinking outside. I'm just thinking out loud here. But that's sort of where my head's at on that one.
If you were the head of baseball operations for the Mets, Phillies, or Braves, how much does winning the division concern you? I mean, do you look at trying to beat the other two NL East teams, or is it just finishing better than the second place NL Central team at the goal?
I think you try to win the division as much as, like, you know, after the fact, people would say, like, oh, well, the Dodgers had 5 days off. The Mets didn't because they didn't win the division. But, you know, you could look at, like, the Braves also lost the division or lost the division series after having the 5 days off. The Mets, you could also have the opposite view. They lost the division even though they tied with the Braves. And then they lost in the wild card round and their season was over before it even started, like, instead of even getting there. So I think the goal is to win the division, and you just try to set yourself up with the best possible situation there where you can set your rotation. Like the Dodgers, obviously they were set up the best in terms of going into the playoffs. They just didn't play well, right? Like you also have to play well, but the best way to try to set yourself up to that is by having the players who play well more often than most. So, and that's by just having the best regular season team. So I think you just go for winning the division and sort of, adjust accordingly, depending on how, like, you know, the season goes.
One of my nieces has always liked noodles in almost any form, pasta, ramen, or in this case, pan fried. She likes them more than almost any other food item. Is there a food item that either of you can always remember liking to the point that if it was on the menu or someone asked what you wanted, the food would immediately come to mind?
Does pizza count here, or is that like more of a finished product, or like, because
I think that counts.
I think it's probably pizza for me. I can eat pizza like pretty much any time, I think,
especially if it's on a bagel,
you know, in bite size form. But yeah, I like that, or tacos. Like, I don't know, like, yeah, no, if I just had to pick one, it's pizza. Like I think that's probably my go-to for this.
Dagwood-esque for me, sandwiches. Oh, nice. Especially sub sandwiches or hoagies or whatever you want to call them, sort of on a roll, but really any sandwiches where that has reputation has continued for me for a while now. My wife knows it. It's a joke.
My wife. Yeah.
At this point, it's just
sandwiches are so great. I love sandwiches. It gets to the point where I don't like having, well, it is, you know, more cost effective to like obviously make your own sandwiches, but like I get to the point where I don't want to like have all the stuff on hand to make like a proper sandwich, you know what I mean? Like to on scale, like to where sure. Otherwise it's not cost. So, but the occasional like going out like on from a, you know, like a chain restaurant type sandwich or anywhere really, but like just a good sandwich every once in a while is so good. Yeah, I love it. You're onto something there.
Yeah.
Plus there's so many directions you can go to. Like
the real trick for me though is like I'm similar to you in that I don't always have it on hand because I try to avoid eating too much bread like that. But when I make a sandwich, I make my own rolls and I make, you know, three or four, and they are especially with hoagie rolls. I think they're better the next day when the sort of the Italian dressing and the mustard kind of absorbs into the bread.
So I've devolved, or some would say evolved, into Mr. Coupon Man when it comes to grocery shopping. Now I will just search into the earth's end to find a deal, you know, at the various grocery stores I go to. And about a week and a half ago, I believe my local Vons had, it was King's Hawaiian rolls were like, I think it was $1.50 off. And it's normally like a $4 package for 12, and they're just the mini rolls. So it was $2.50, and I bought that. And then I bought a package of like salami that was, I don't know, maybe, I don't remember how big it was, 10 ounces or something. And it was only like $3.50 because it was also on sale. So for $6, I had the greatest run of like 4 days of little mini sandwiches, probably two or three at a time. Because it's just those mini sandwiches, I didn't put a bunch of stuff on it or anything. What I did do was put horseradish on one side of the bun, or one half of the bun, and mustard on the other half, and then just like maybe four or five pieces of salami. And I just had a little fun little mini sandwich, and it was wonderful. So I'm with you on that. I'm going to now, you know what? Let's go eat a sandwich. How about that?
You got
That's it for us. Don't know exactly what we're going to do. We might not have another one of these episodes for you until after the new year. By then, obviously, the Dodgers will have signed several people. We'll talk about it after that. But thanks for listening this entire year, and we will talk to you soon.